This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. Now, in about half an hour, Roshan Kunnison speaks to Warren Hayashi, who is the Asia-Pacific of the president of ARDIAN, on The Breakfast Grill.
Yeah, so this is an issue which will be discussed, right? Because digital payments have picked up steam over the last few years and looks to be the way forward for us especially. But for most countries, it's very fragmented, especially for businesses and merchants. So the Dutch unicorn, which means that they're worth more than $1 billion, ARDIAN, say they're the solution and can better unify the payment space. So Roshan will talk to them about their recent entry into Malaysia, COVID-19 impacts on payments, and they have EBITDA margins of nearly 50% on their business model, which I guess partly explains why they are unicorns as well.
Yeah, interesting company, especially in this COVID-19 era where everything has gone online. But in the meanwhile, let's look at the UK, because the UK government announced the country's mobile carrier would be banned from buying any Huawei 5G kits, and all such equipment would actually be forced to be stripped out of networks by 2027. So, you know, in 7 years' time, due to what they believe is a threat to their telecoms infrastructure security. Now, according to sources from The Guardian, the British government privately told Huawei Technologies that the decision stemmed partly from pressure by the US.
You know, of course, we know that the UK officials gave Huawei the impression that the decision could be reviewed if Donald Trump fails to win a second term and eases its policy towards China. So you can kind of imagine, just like how we are caught between the crosshairs of this US-China trade war, the UK as well. And it's not just because that they are, you know, especially in a relationship with the US for the longest time. they've got to make up their minds as well.
Bromance.
Exactly.
For some analysis on what this means for the UK-China relations, we speak to Simon Baptist, Global Chief Economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Now, in the past few months, the relationship between China and the UK has been tense over issues like the Hong Kong security law. But is the Huawei ban the straw that will break the camel's back and lead to a great reset between these two countries?
Good morning. It certainly is a significant milestone in the deterioration of the relationship between the UK and China. But these tensions have been building for quite some time. The UK has been a bit of an outlier amongst the US's very, very close allies in terms of its relationship to Huawei. It has allowed it in the past into the UK telecom systems. It's had an agreement with Huawei to check all its kit in by the UK sort of military and spy agencies. And so the UK has allowed Huawei in historically, but now that relationship has come to an end. There's really been a change in attitude, and I think that the mood in the UK has altered because of what's happened in Hong Kong, where China is now it's no longer feasible to say that China is a reliable international partner. And that has kind of tipped quite a few of the UK's politicians over into the camp of saying, look, despite the safeguards and the checks we've had in place, we just can't trust this anymore.
Yeah, optics-wise, at least, it shows that the UK is aligning with America in this regard. But can they afford to do so, especially on the eve of Brexit? And, of course, there's this not small matter, of that $88 billion trade relationship that the UK has with China.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to help the economy. And China has been a pretty big investor in the UK. And many Chinese firms have seen the UK as a bit of a backdoor entry into the US. So you show that you can invest in a close US ally successfully, and then you hope later on that you'll be let into the US market. And yeah, and the UK has been more keen to attract FDI. And it historically has had a pretty liberal attitude towards FDI. And of course, there's much Malaysian investment in the UK as a result of this. However, there's not really a choice now of leaving things as they are or doing nothing. So the reality is that the relationship between the UK and China was on a downward trajectory, and there's not really a lot that can be done to change that. I mean, the UK's option would have been otherwise to allow Huawei to continue in. That would have had repercussions with the US, but then it also would have had repercussions in terms of security. And I think now with the changes that China is making in Hong Kong, it demonstrates to the UK that China is has an international vision that is at odds with that of the UK and that is at odds with the UK's interests. And so the decision here has been that in the long run, look, the allowing China to continue to propagate its vision in international affairs will cause more damage to the UK's interest than the investment that the UK is receiving. So that's been the change in the political calculation.
And Simon, the Chinese ambassador to Britain, Liu Xiaoming, has threatened retaliation, saying that UK would have to bear the consequences if it threatened China as an enemy. Now, what kind of potential repercussions are we looking at here?
So there'll definitely be a reduction in the amount of Chinese capital seeking to invest in the UK. However, that was already happening. I mean, the Chinese economy, while it's still growing, has been battered by COVID-19 as well, and there's a big need for capital to be at home. Chinese investment was already declining in the UK. That process will be accelerated. The bigger risk, I think, is for UK firms in China. I do expect to see the Chinese authorities leaning more heavily on UK firms. They'll do things like have some safety inspections, more regulatory pressure in certain sectors, and UK firms and individuals will find themselves under more pressure and scrutiny from the Chinese authorities.
Yeah, Simon, there's also the small matter, not small matter, of course, about the 3 million Hong Kong residents that might be offered citizenship in the UK if the Hong Kong impasse gets worse. Do you think Boris Johnson will follow through with that promise?
This was quite a surprising move when you think that the immigration sentiment in the UK has been quite negative, and that was one of the major themes that drove the Brexit vote, particularly amongst Boris Johnson's Conservative Party. Yet the Conservative Party MPs have been quite strongly in favour of bringing more Hong Kongers in. So I think this shows that the emotional and political commitment by individual MPs in Boris Johnson's party is a key driver of this broader China decision. I do expect to see some movement of Hong Kongers to the UK. I mean, certainly nothing like 3 million. I think we might see maybe ultimately a few tens of thousands take a visa. Now, this will partly be because of the Chinese restrictions and people's worries in Hong Kong about the future. But also, of course, you know, the UK is a desirable country for immigration. It's been pretty difficult for non-EU citizens to migrate to the UK. So just the loosening up of those rules will mean that some people that probably might have taken this option anyway now will, as will a few extras who are worried about the security laws.
On that note, thank you for your time, Simon. That was Simon Baptist, Global Chief Economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, talking about UK-China relations and how fraught it has become in the last few weeks, particularly over the banning of Huawei and 5G technology. In fact, they seem more angry about this rather than UK saying, hey, you know, you Hong Kongers, those with the special British passport, you guys can come over and stay if you want to. That seemed to make them even more mad.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, this whole relationship has been on a downward trend, as Baptiste was saying some minutes ago. And the development of events and the capturing of countries such as ourselves in terms of having to pick a side between these two superpowers is disturbingly fast, right? And again, I want to highlight Ray Dalio, and he's been writing extensively on the rise and fall of empires in his LinkedIn profile. And he's saying quite disturbingly, there's lots of parallels in today's times with the 1930 to 1945 era when the Second World War commenced and, of course, ended. Right now, we're very, very similar to the 1939 instance where there was huge gaps between the wealthy and the not wealthy, the rise of another power to contest America, and which obviously descended into war with Germany. And, of course, there was the Allies on one side and the Germans on the other side, with the Italians and, you know, the Russians on the other side as well. So I just hope it doesn't come to that point. But, you know, Ray Dalio did say that sometimes it ends in revolutions and wars, which I don't which doesn't serve anybody, of course, you know.
My preferred parallel would be actually with the Cold War. I'm not sure this would lead to a world war, but remember the Cold War ended quite amicably.
Yeah, the Russians, yes, and the Americans.
We did see the fall of the Berlin Wall, and we did see a rise in globalization. So I don't know if that's a more optimistic kind of outlook that we can, you know, kind of imagine. You know, so let's find out. But up next, we'll be speaking to Wan Anwar Wan Ibrahim, former Special Functions Officer Speaker at the Speaker's Office at Dewan Rakyat. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.